It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am doing fine. Of course, it's a glorious morning. I've been out and about.
Bring us back.
Yes. The sun has returned. What remains of a little bit of snow is going away, and we have some interesting topics that we can talk about. Well, I thought we could start with Tuesday's meeting with the city council. It was kind of an interesting one. You heard parts of it, I know.
Yeah, why don't you kick it off? Because I did get there a little late, so...
Well, there were a couple of things that happened. One, and I want to remind people, because it is increasingly good weather, which means that people are out and about, which means they're out and about on their bicycles. And the mayor gave a prominent place to two council members, and that was Julie Berbrick and Pete LaFrance, for their efforts to improve bike riding in the city of Palmer and in general. And this is Bike Month here in the city of Palmer. And she had them stand up and proclaimed their work as being good and that this was that kind of month. And I think that was a nice thing. There are people on the council who work hard doing a variety of different things, and I think the recognition was deserved, et cetera, for that.
So there wasn't a bike month previously, right?
Yes, to my knowledge, that is so. So, for example, if in years past you'd come into Palmer, you might have seen some bikes here and there. But I think the city has committed in part by ensuring that there are bike racks, and they are very interesting bike racks. Anyone who's come by our studio knows that out in front, sort of between the bookstore and the studios here, Big Cabbage Radio, there's a beautifully designed bike rack, and they appear in other places as well. And I think that's a recognition that they're, one, bikes are good, and the city encourages the use of bikes and having a place to put them. So
is there a couple of questions about that, Mike?
Sure.
Is there any talk of increasing the amount of bike racks around
town? Yes. There's been discussion about that, and we'll see how that plays out. I don't have a memory of the specific layout of additional bike racks, et cetera, but I think you're going to see that happening. And of course, right across the street from where we are, where I'm speaking from in the studio, there's the Palmer Depot, and in front of the Palmer Depot, there is a bike station, which allows you to put air into tires, for example, which is kind of a nice thing to do from time to time. People, if they don't have their own air pump, will seek out one typically at a gas station or something, but this one is provided by the city, and there it is. So that's another feature. Yeah,
that popped up last summer. You know, I guess that we should just say there is a lot of bike advocates in town. I'm always amazed during the parades, even in the winter parades for Colony Days or Colony Christmas, over 100 bikers would show up and, you know, show their solidarity for biking even in the wintertime. So we have a really growing active year-round biking community, and I know there's several even new events in the hopper, Mike, and that's again credit out to Councilwoman Julie Bruber, who actually owns a bike store along with her husband, and Backcountry Bikes, which is a great contribution to downtown Palmer, and Councilman Pete LaFrance, who's really been about biking ever since he got on the council several years ago, and has he rides his bike year-round to the council meeting from his house downtown. So lots of advocacy, but it takes that to get these things going. And those big bike events bring a lot of new people and new revenues to downtown Palmer. So it's really an interesting and exciting possibility to see if Palmer can turn out to be really sort of the go-to mecca of biking in the valley. So,
well, and
good
and,
for Palmer.
And the other thing about it, of course, is the we'll segue a little bit here, but stay within the topic. There's been a group that's been meeting now to deal with crosswalks. And there's going to be a presentation at the next Trails Committee Board meeting,
Parks, Rec, and Trails.
And then and that will happen on the 2nd of May. And there will be then another presentation and request made to the next City Council meeting, which doesn't happen until May 14th.
Yeah, they have we have a lot of Tuesdays and
right.
this month. So, yeah, three weeks.
Right. So, and the whole purpose of that is to pick a design and have approval from the city for this particular ad hoc group to paint a sidewalk as a pilot to demonstrate how.
A crosswalk.
A crosswalk, rather. Yeah, sidewalk. Well, sidewalks would be good. No, I keep thinking of sidewalk, but crosswalks, and we'll finalize which crosswalk will be painted with the design, and then look toward, as many other communities have done, doing that in a variety of other areas, which will, I'm sure, bring up the topic then of the rest of the crosswalks that exist in Palmer. Some of them have been around for a long time, and we also have areas where there's been a discussion and questions asked about why there isn't a crosswalk here or there or elsewhere. And there's some good answers why that hasn't happened, and yet there may be ways to improve that so that if you don't have a very long block, you'll actually have a crosswalk, especially as traffic begins to pick up a little bit in the city. And there are some guidelines about how best to put a crosswalk in that it'll actually work and be safe for everybody.
What are the reasons, Mike? I don't know that I've heard the reasons why there aren't more sidewalks or crosswalks.
Well, part of it is, think about as you walk around town, where, you come to a place and you're on a corner somewhere, and if you have traffic signs of some sort, if you have a stop sign, you have a way to define that is not just a corner on a very long street, that you can put a crosswalk across where people will actually be stopping. For example, a red light and flashing red light in the center of town. That's a four-way. People stop there. You have crosswalks going across. It's a good example of something that works. Now, if you move on up Evergreen, for example, there's a corner there, and yet there is no traffic. There's a stop sign one way, but not the other ways. And so you can have a crosswalk going across where you have the stop sign, but then to cross from those corners to the other side of the road where there is not a stop sign, it's problematic because you're throwing the crosswalk across the street, but a vehicle coming down the road doesn't have to slow down for that. And unlike some other places, I was recently in Washington, D.C., for example, the law reads, and the signs sit, there are signs at many crosswalks that say the pedestrian has the right of way. Well, that's not true in Alaska. I've had this discussion in some detail, more detail, and I would direct listeners to our most recent Inside the City programming, which had Police Chief Lance Ketterling. We spent about 10 or 15 minutes going through the whole range of things. But the reality is, here in the state of Alaska and in the city of Palmer, it seems that you as a person crossing the street are pretty much having equal rights with the vehicle coming down the street, but you certainly are different in size and potential for damage. So you just want to be careful and not just throw yourself into the crosswalk and say, I'm in the crosswalk, have the vehicle stop. And so when you start looking at that and you say, all right, if we have a lot of crosswalks all around those places where people have informally found that, yeah, I want to go over there. I want to cross, for example, at the Valley Hotel or Turkey Red, I want to cross South Alaska Street to the other side. There's no crosswalk there, per se, because they're really, that's a kind of a main street running down. There's no traffic control. And as you go on up South Alaska, you have all of those other streets, but you don't have crosswalks across there. Obviously, people cross, but in order to put it into a proper place, there are some good suggestions about what makes a safe crosswalk. Do people then go walking the long block in order to cross the street? They don't do that. So fortunately, because we have relatively low traffic, people have survived and we don't have incidents of a lot of damage. So all of that's probably going to be, you know, looked at as more focus comes on crosswalks. And I'm only talking about city streets. If you become involved with a borough or a state street, there are even more guidelines that are required to be met before you can put a crosswalk willy-nilly across the highway.
Yeah, so much to be said about that. And I mean, it goes back to the basics of the way the borough was built out, and that was it was built for vehicles, not people. And now a lot more people are finding that they don't want to be in vehicles, or they want to enjoy the walkability and the dense proximity of places that they need to go downtown. I know in the downtown Portland area, at least in that part of Oregon, every corner is a crosswalk, and pedestrians have the right of way over cars. And I hear you what you're saying about Police Chief Ketterling and the way that the state law reads, but it seems to me that the city could adapt a new pedestrian policy or ordinance and tighten that down a little bit. At the very least, I know I was downtown yesterday, Mike, walking to the depot, and I live downtown as you do. And I was just kind of looking around. There's not one real sign that says pedestrians crossing or pedestrian here or slow for pedestrian. I mean, we go into what people would consider remote neighborhoods, and you may see a sign that says children playing, slow down. But we don't do that with our main streets. And no, there hasn't been any. There's been a few accidents over the years, nothing remarkable at this point, but it kind of makes me sad that we have to wait until it becomes a problem, because if you've driven downtown when things are walked downtown during certain times of day, it can be very problematic trying to get across the street, even in the crosswalk, where you would think, if there is a crosswalk, like where Vagabonds is, that people would naturally stop there because there is a crosswalk there, but people don't stop there in their cars.
That is true. Well, yeah.
The nature of it is the cars have the right-of-way. And I guess, you know, I go back to that same thing I keep saying is, who are we building our cities for? Are we building them for people or cars? And over the time, the data is showing that more people are not driving. And people are getting older, and they're losing the capacity to drive. And we have to adapt to those things. So I'm excited about this new crosswalk. I think, if nothing else, I watched that project. I think it kind of got kicked off from the Neil Penalosa.
Yes, exactly.
In January, talking about livability and walkability. And I think if nothing, it's going to make people more aware of pedestrians and how, you know, even if you're going to have a different regulation or protection, I would say, it's not a bad thing. It can be a very fun thing and a very good thing for a city.
Sure.
I'm really enthused at these folks that have kept with it. It's not an easy lift. You have to go to the city. You have to come up with some funding. You have to. I mean, it's not easy for this to be done. It's real easy for crosswalk to just be repainted every year. That's pretty the way it is. But when you want to change it up with design and all the other things, there's a lot of it's a public process. And so kudos to those folks that have stuck with this. And I'm really excited to see the final outcome of that.
Sure. And I think just one last final comment that in Washington, D.C., which is a much more busy place. Huge numbers of people walking, riding bikes, scooters, vehicles, etc. I think having the culture be one of, you know, yield, and people, there's this whole understanding that that's what you're to do, yield to pedestrians, plus a very well-developed crossing light, cross here, etc. And that's perhaps reflecting the transition from Alaska, a more quiet place, to a more busy place, etc. But in any case, we're making some progress.
Well, the grid of the cities too are shorter blocks, and that helps a little bit. But I think you made a really good point when you talked about the flashing light at Evergreen there. That people do. That's probably the easiest place to cross, just because of that little flashing light there, which it looks like they're going to put an actual stoplight there now with the revamping of the Glen Highway from what I saw last night. But maybe we need some more flashing lights at some more intersections to get people's attention. I'm not really sure, but traffic calming is not a bad thing.
Sure.
And in a way, it's not just the pedestrians, it's the people on bikes and the people in wheelchairs and all other, you know, modes. So,
well, let's
good conversation.
Yeah, let's finish up with the other major discussion that occurred at the city council meeting on Tuesday, and then maybe we'll have a little time to talk about.
Just do a real quick little shout out? You heard it. I didn't, from the new business that's in town, the manufacturing business. I heard a little bit of that.
They've actually not so new. They've been around for.
They're not new, no, but they're very successful, and I listened to part of it, and it was really fascinating.
Right. Well, the lead person there, Hans, was in, and he has reported in the past. He did a nice job of reminding people that this is a technology that is unique in the world, and it's basically kind of a giant. Vacuum cleaner in a very, very difficult environment, and that is an aircraft carrier, and it has revolutionized the cleaning of the carrier's landing area, and they have gone pretty much Navy-wide with it, and they've also expanded from that to having large pieces of equipment that do cleaning of streets and water systems and so on. And so they have not only the facility here where there's roughly 30 people employed, but they have another facility in Connecticut as well. So this is a national, international, very significant operation.
And yeah, about 30 people here in Palmer.
Right. And Hans was very clear about the feeling he had about a positive reception by the city and having an industrial park with the proper features to allow his company to thrive. And so he did that. Yes, he did.
And he talked a lot about the possibilities of others coming in. And he's going to be a really, really good source. I know I've been reading a lot of stuff about economic gardening in communities, and he would be a very, very good source, and he seems very open to it, to, you know, talk about the barriers, and he didn't sound like there were a lot, but there were some that would be more helpful to other people coming in, and so he could be a great resource, and that's what communities need to attract other businesses. Success builds upon success, so... I love the part where he said he had one reverse commuter of his employees that came from Anchorage to out to the valley to work. I mean, we need more of that for sure.
And then the other topic of note was a lengthy discussion. There were at least three, maybe four people who spoke to it. And that was a topic involving a change in the guidelines for dealing with food trucks and itinerant
roaming vendors,
right? Mm-hmm. And that started out to be, it seemed to be fairly clear, but there was some concern expressed by some vendors who spoke about the complexity of what was being asked, And finally, the council, city manager, all attempted to look at the intention and to say, in some respects, there were three groups we're talking about. They're the brick and mortar, in place, long term, restaurants, coffee shops, etc. And you have another group, and it was an important one, all of the vendors, et cetera, associated with the Alaska State Fair. And then there were the vendors who would pop up when there are events in the city of Palmer or when there are not events in the city of Palmer. Mm-hmm. And the question was, if there's an event, Friday Fling, for example, is one of those, the Friday Fling organizers control the way in which people are there, where they're going to be, et cetera. So if you have somebody who is coming in and hasn't been able to get in a spot or whatever, can they park on the edge of Friday Fling? Or if you're going to have a Colony Days event or anything of that sort, where do you allow along South Alaska Street, for example, people to park their rig and essentially either compete in a level playing field with the restaurants and coffee shops, et cetera, that exist? What kind of permits do you have to have, et cetera, to do that? What kind of taxes do you have to pay, and so on? That's the intention, was to figure that all out. And then you began to realize that there were all kinds of questions about, well, you could park, but it'd have to be 100 feet away from the event or whatever. And it finally passed. Not without some concern being expressed, primarily, I think, by Councilmember David Fuller. Yeah. And he was basically saying, I think it's safe to summarize by saying, yeah, there certainly have to be guidelines that are there. But basically, it's a more of an opportunity to compete. If you have something that you can offer and compete successfully, you survive. If you don't, you go away.
Well, it seemed on the surface kind of an uncomplicated thing, but it is a complicated thing in that a lot of the places where these food vendor trucks and other vendor trucks have been parking have been in public right-of-ways.
Ah, there you go. And now you brought up the important thing.
That makes the city involved because they're right-of-way, and they have a lot of businesses that are here year-round paying their taxes, supporting the city, and it doesn't bid well for them when they let somebody come in just from the weekend when the peak of the business is here and not pay any of the fees associated with brick and mortar and set up
on the public
right
public
and so
street.
I think that was kind of, you know, even though the city does not run those events, a lot of those big events, they still have an interest because of the public right away, which I think was pretty clear in that conversation, not agreed upon with some of the vendors, but it seems to me a pretty clear point. And I think the other thing they didn't talk about, I was a little surprised, and this may be because the city doesn't run, people will be surprised that they don't run things like the Friday Fling and Colony Days and those type of things that are run by chambers and the Palmer Downtown Association and things like that. But you know, what it does allow when a big food vendor or a vendor comes to be able to go sit on a public right-of-way, they don't pay anything to be part of that celebration, that the monies which go to support it and to pay people to promote it and that sort of thing. So they're sort of hitchhiking on the event. And I think that there's been a little consternation about that, which seems to be kind of valid to me as well. So I thought someone might move to say, you know, all vendors come as many as you want, but go to this area of town and set up, kind of like this Barnard Market does, where all the food trucks are.
Oh, sure.
One, you know, there were, I think it's across where the Choku Charlie parking lot was, and they all, because they struggled with this too, and.
But logistically, that might be a difficult thing. You know, I hear what you're saying, and I'm thinking, okay, where would that be? You know,
maybe the library parking lot.
Yeah, maybe. But
the library parking lot would seem to be the right place. If you were going to put it on city parking, that would make sense, and they are all there.
So would that be a first come first serve Wild West type of thing?
I think that's the way it is at Spinard. They pay a fee. But you set up, you get there, you set up, and people find their their place. I don't know. I'd have to see what Spinard does, but they've figured it out. And we're not the first place in the whole country to have to deal with this. So finding out how other small communities do it might benefit it. But I think it's probably done for now, it sounded like, unless somebody reconsiders and you know, somebody else comes back to not.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're
about
right.
It.
Well, let us just, we have a couple of minutes left. Let's just touch upon something that we'll be doing much more with. And it sounds as if you went over the Palmer Tea Poll last night from 4 to 7. DOT was there, and they were showing what was going to be happening with the next piece of work done on the Glen Highway. And a lot of people, we were there a little bit early, didn't see you, but we missed you, but got some good answers, et cetera. What was your impression overall?
You know, it was just another one of those check the box so that they've done the public process where if anybody had any questions, they could ask them. There's been so many of these there wasn't going to be any minds changed. That wasn't taking input to say, I don't like the way you're putting that corner of that road.
Yeah, it was far, far down the road from there.
Far down the road. You know, they were there to answer questions is what I got. I didn't really learn anything too new. Did you, Mike?
Well, I primarily, for our purposes at the radio station, made another connection with both the designer and the person who'll be in charge of construction. So we're going to be doing hopefully next week, a kickoff overview describing what's happening, and then on a regular basis do some reports about how things are progressing along. I think establishing that kind of connection was my major purpose. Certainly it was a reminder that people are interested. It's already begun, the work. I suspect, as we've said earlier, there's no easy way to change something if you have looked at it and say, well, why don't you move it over here a couple feet or whatever? That's way beyond then. It's more a question of, okay, how is this going to affect my life? Mm-hmm. Be reminded of, okay, once it's done, if I have a certain pattern of travel, I might be doing something a little bit different because of this.
Yeah, I think so too. Unfortunately, the DOT, this is federal money that's paying for a lot of this, this whole project, has not ever been accused of being nimble. So I think at this point, it is what it is, and it's going to be a very interesting summer, Mike, because it's going to really affect sort of getting in and out of the heart of downtown. It sounds like there'll be a lot of evening work going on, so they're going to try to make it as least painful as it can. But this is the phase, and this is kind of the big phase for us because it affects where we're at, getting access. And I'm sure business owners have some angst about it because people try to avoid these construction. It does sound like they'll be completely shut down around the time of the fair, so that's good to know.
And they're making pretty good progress, too. In fact, I think they're a little ahead of the game. Well, yeah. Citizen Lobbyist, I want to thank you for calling in today. Any last comment? You've got about 30 seconds.
That's it, Mike. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. It looks like it's back, and go out and enjoy it.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll talk with you next week.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.